In a Field of Reason, Lawyers Woo Luck, Too, by Benjamin Weiser. Day after too many days, the defense lawyer Murray Richmond went to the same restaurant for lunch, ordering the same meal as he had the day before, a Mayan sun salad with a sautéed fillet of salmon. He continued to do so until his murder trial in the Bronx finally ended on Wednesday, and he will resume the ritual the next time he goes to trial there. "I'm eating the same food every freaking day," Mr. Richmond said recently, noting that the trial was lasting several weeks longer than he had expected. "It's very good, but how many times can you eat it?" For all his considerable skills at the bar and knowledge of the law, Mr. Richmond, whose clients have included mobsters, politicians, and rap stars, acknowledges a complicated and at times humorous interplay with superstition. In this way, Mr. Richmond is not unlike many of New York's most successful trial lawyers. Their inclination to dismiss superstitious behavior is usually followed by an admission of a particular ritual unfailingly observed. Ira Lee Sorkin, who represented Bernard L. Madoff in the huge Ponzi scheme case, said he always wears a certain kind of Hebrew University tie during his opening statement. Steve Zissou never has a haircut until a trial ends. Deidre von Dornum, a lawyer with the Federal Defender's Office, will enter or leave the United States Courthouse in Manhattan during trials only through the Pearl Street entrance. Sabrina Schroff, of the same office, does not change pens in trials. "The trial gods are very powerful," said Peter E. Quijano. "You respect them. You make little offerings." For 3 straight days, while awaiting a verdict in the recent terrorism trial of his client Ahmed Khalfan Gailani, Mr. Quijano ordered a cheddar burger and Bloody Mary from the same waitress in the same booth at the Whiskey Tavern on Baxter Street. Mr. Quijano, as he did in that case, also tries to insert the name of his Scottish Terrier, Watson, into summations. It's part of the human condition that no matter how many years of education you've had, you still have faith in certain totems, said Arthur R. Miller, a law professor at New York University. He added, "I won't go to court without a 3-piece suit, and without a red tie, and without a red pocket square." Trial lawyers, of course, are not alone. Baseball players tap their cleats. In theater, it is bad luck to whistle backstage. And no one may utter the title of the play Macbeth unless one is actually working on a production and the script requires it, said Howard Sherman, executive director of the American Theater Wing. A euphemism, the Scottish play, exists for those who must refer to it. But wouldn't lawyers who are seemingly driven by reason and logic be different? "This is completely irrational," admits David A. Runke, one of the nation's leading specialists in capital cases. "I believe that black is a color particularly associated with death and mourning, so I will not write in black ink." Mr. Runke said that he sends emails with blue rather than black letters, and uses blue, green, or white binders, what he calls life colors. He avoids red. "I have no idea where it came from," he said. But he has no plans to alter his ways. In 16 capital trials, he said, he has had only 2 clients sentenced to death and none executed, an accomplishment in a field where the goal is to save a defendant's life. Other lawyers have their own approaches. "I won't pass up a homeless person or a beggar during an entire trial," said Gerald L. Shargel, whose clients have included organized crime figures and, more recently, Mark S. Dreyer, the lawyer convicted in an elaborate fraud. "I will walk under ladders, I will let black cats pass in front of me, but I'll not pass up a beggar," Mr. Shargel said. He typically gives a $20 bill. "I've done that in every economy, through recessions and through robust times," he said. Mitra Hormozi, who was a federal prosecutor in Brooklyn in the 2006 trial of 2 retired detectives who had become mob assassins, said she liked to wear navy or gray suits while trying cases, but would put on a softer peach-colored outfit when, for example, a cooperating witness with a violent background would testify. "I was convinced," Ms. Hormozi said, "for whatever reason, this was the lucky suit. Every one of my big trials, you will see me wear that at one point." Stephen Gillars, a New York University law professor, said that in classes he had talked about such behavior by lawyers. The analogy for me has always been to the pre-scientific age, when people attributed phenomena to the gods because they didn't know why else it was happening. The rituals often follow the outcomes of earlier cases. In the 2001 gun possession trial of Sean Combs, also known as Diddy, his lawyer, Benjamin Brofman, wore a slender bracelet of red thread called a bendel that came from Israel and was supposed to ward off the evil eye. Mr. Combs was eventually acquitted, and Mr. Brofman still wears the wristband. He is not superstitious, he maintains, but says, "I just wear it because since I've put it on, I've enjoyed good luck both personally and professionally. Do I think about just breaking it off and throwing it away? Yes, the thought has occurred to me, but I haven't." Sometimes such rituals produce inconsistent results. Jonathan P. Bach had eaten in a Chinatown noodle shop on the day in 2007 that a jury acquitted his client, David Lemus, on charges stemming from a killing at the Palladium nightclub. Figuring the noodle shop might bring the right karma, Mr. Bach recalled, he dined there again during deliberations in another trial. But in that case, his client was convicted on some counts. "You don't win every trial," Mr. Bach said. But he added that he had not returned to the noodle shop. In some cases, a ritual is based on avoiding certain acts. Charles A. Stillman said he once dozed off years ago during lengthy deliberations, only to be awakened and told that a verdict had been reached. It turned out to be guilty. Now, he never allows himself to nod off during deliberations. "If defeat is going to come," Mr. Stillman said, "I'm going to be awake when it arrives." Rituals can follow lawyers from job to job. Roberto Finzi said that for years as a federal prosecutor, he wore the same lucky tie whenever he gave an opening argument, a practice he continued after becoming a defense lawyer. The tie became so frayed that he finally replaced it. "Trial lawyers believe in jinxes," Mr. Finzi acknowledged from White Plains, where he is defending a man in a murder trial. Along with using his keen judgment and legal skills, Mr. Finzi made clear that he was doing whatever else was necessary. "I've been up here 10 days, he said earlier this month, "and I've had a tuna fish sandwich for lunch every single day." But Joshua L. Dratel questioned his colleague's adherence to superstition, asking, "If where I ate dinner last night decides the merits of a case, then what's the point of even trying?" And Stephen M. Cohen, another veteran lawyer, observed, "You certainly wouldn't want to learn that your heart surgeon or your 747 pilot always wears the same pair of underwear when it's time to perform." One lawyer who insists he does not believe in such rituals is Richard B. Lind, who played college baseball at Cornell and recalled how he and some teammates avoided stepping on foul lines because it was seen as unlucky. "Now, when he has a trial," Mr. Lind said, "he actively tries to dispel any hold that superstition may have on a case. I will purposely step on a crack," he explained. He then acknowledged the possible contradiction in his action. As for Mr. Richman, the jury returned a guilty verdict after about a week of deliberations, despite his lunchtime sojourns to the restaurant Giovanni. Nonetheless, the next time he has a trial in the Bronx, a table awaits. He, too, maintains that he is not superstitious. "I don't believe in any spiritual aspect of human nature," Mr. Richman said. However, I could be wrong.